It's not wrong.
Yeah.
It is not wrong. You want to do this thing?
Let's do it.
Let's do it again. I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden it will all become lovely. The flower that opens in the morning light. So, and when you asked, you just asked if I do have typing sounds on my phone. I can now confirm.
You do.
That I do. I have heartbreaking news. It has been since August 9th, 2022, after a good run, since we have gotten a review. Zero reviews. That's an entire month, almost to the T, with radio silence.
Ironically, or not ironically, it correlates directly with how much we have pled.
It always does.
It always does.
So it's time to incentivize. Your idea, I thought it was a fun one. We should pick a random review of those people that did, try to track them down, and give them a gift basket for reviewing. Retroactive incentivization.
We'll have caramel turtles.
We can do that. They're very good. They're very, very good. And then for new people who do review, I bet we do the same damn thing.
Setting the precedent high. Welcome to the Grain Gang. Here's a gift basket. What businesses? There's businesses all the time that do kind of shit like that. Like, I guess sports. It's called your bonus, your signing bonus.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It seems like a slippery slope.
Yeah, it's been a while. We've got a full. When you get a month with zero, you've got to resort to like dire tactics.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're at.
I'm on my knees.
So to do what we've already done, let's go. I've picked three reviews at random. And by random, I mean three of the most recent reviews. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tee them up for you with very few clues. I'm just going to kind of say a word or two about each. And you're going to pick one of the three.
Okay.
Then I'm going to go Magnum PI style. We're going to figure out who they are. We're going to get them a Grain Gang t-shirt, a Grain Gang sticker, and a $20 gift certificate to Bissell Brothers that is usable at BisselBrothers.com. So no matter where you are in the world, this will work. You ready?
Yep.
So I'm going to give you three choices here. Number one, choice number one, just called Flows. Choice number one is Flows. Choice number two is Cam. And choice number three, don't bump the gump. Don't bump the glump. There's an L in there. I'm sorry. Don't bump the glump.
Flows, I mean, you were so hard on yourself, so I need to go retroactively, give love there, whoever that was. And also, I think the other one's one of your friends, and the middle one is presumably both of our friends.
Not the way I did it, maybe. I don't know. The middle one,
Oh, is that Cam praising one? I just kind of
pulled them from that, which also... So I don't know who Icy McDeezy023 is.
Okay, I thought the one was the long baby story.
Could be. Yep. Nope.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, don't
about.
Bump the glump. Nope, yeah. That is because the reviewer was Abby Silverstein. I thought Shel Silverstein, and I went, don't bump the glump. Because that's
not your friend from growing up?
Nope. Don't bump the glump was an Abby Silverstein.
My ego's in check, so I don't have to read the reviews keep me going. Yeah. So, you know.
And Flows, which I had a feeling that you might do for that very reason as a kind friend, is not anything to do with my rapping. It just says awesome podcast. The variety of topics are fantastic. And the conversation just flows.
It just flows.
Enjoy every episode. And that is Vert1313. Whoever made the review Fun Listen in the title, under the username Vert1313 on July 11th, 2022. Please DM us or email us at graininginpod.
And when you do that, tell us if your name springs from beginning to taste beer verticals in the year 2013.
Oh, wow.
Curious.
Oh, wow.
And you had 13 of them, maybe.
Send that along.
Yeah, send it along.
I doubt you had 1,313 of them.
I definitely doubt it.
I think you just like 13 so much you put it twice.
Quick with that number. That would have taken me way longer to actually say.
Appreciate that. Yeah. I told you I've been taking nootropics, and they're making me sick, I think.
Hell yeah.
But they're supposed to make the neurons fire. We'll see what happens. But that's our plea for reviews. Please leave us some, and I bet we will pick a random one again next solo and mail you something. So pay attention, please review. It really helps. We appreciate it. On to the regular things.
Never tied a ball and so it's on to the next sport.
God, dude! How you been, brother?
Good, man. Very good. Very good. Finished the pieces in my first chess set.
Have you talked about that on here?
No, it's...
So let the people know. Let the people know.
I just did. That's really all there is to say about it.
Slave to the lathe.
Slave to the lathe.
I am one. Where did that come from? At its very first inception of like actually pulling the trigger to buy a lathe. And at that time, did you know that it was because you wanted to make those specific pieces?
I knew I wanted to make chess pieces, yeah. It comes in the same place, though, that in college got me all the fucking hemp
stuff,
and, like, I only get to that point when I know I enjoy something enough, but I do go pretty hard on it. So, yeah, I did, I was calculating, though, just trying to figure out the business kind of aspects of this, and, like, I think probably based on that first set, if that's an accurate representation, if I, at like a $750 hourly for the labor, I think I could get away with selling these sets for $20,000.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Or you could give one away to the next people who review.
You're going to need a lot more than that, my friend. I'm fucking sorry, but you're going to need to do a lot more than give a review.
I did try. No joke.
I mean, this took me all summer.
Yeah.
And the first run, you there was like many to... You do a lot of designs that are like, oh, that doesn't work.
Not going to work. This
reason.
Doesn't
so
work.
So there's a lot of R&D, but it took me being pretty obsessive about it for like 2 full months to get 32 pieces. So yeah, a review ain't going to gut it. I'm sorry. But yeah, maybe with like the economies of scale, we can get that price down.
10,000.
17, something like that.
Cut it in half. 10,000. That's incredible. Are you enjoying it? See yourself continuing to kind of play with wood, I guess, or continue to make more pieces or.
Yeah, thanks. I thought this was super bad repartee or something.
I mean it in a good way to play in the medium that is wood. How's that?
Do I respect wood?
I know you don't as much as Matt Walters, but.
No, true. But, maybe as much as Larry David. And
much more.
The thing with lathes is there's not a lot of like you're limited to the space. The big ones to do other things, like a few people have been like make a bat, and I think it'd be kind of compared to the details with I'm sure it'd be challenging in another
different
way that
ways.
I don't know
about.
But in terms of the detail making
instead of making a knight.
No,
seems
you're
like
making
there might
the
be some ease
fucking
there.
Thing.
Yeah.
So like it'd be cool, but you would need a whole other lathe for that, and I'm kind of limited to the 16 inch space or something like that until otherwise noted. So there's only bowls. I'll probably start trying to make some of that stuff, but there's a lot you can do with chess.
Yeah.
You know, I need to get better at it for sure to warrant obsessively making the sets.
Amen to that, baby.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
Don't we all?
But awesome. It's been cool to see that take shape.
Thanks.
You're welcome, man. Fucking welcome, man. Shoulder season in Maine. We find ourselves out the other side of Labor Day. Shoulder season in Maine.
And speaking of shoulders, yours are looking taut. And that's because you are been a training man. You've been a running man like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the Stephen King adaptation.
I certainly have been running a lot as of recently. Pounding the pavement. I have an ultra marathon going.
You got your feet on the streets.
Yeah, I bought some Hokas. I think last time I didn't even know how to pronounce them. I think I was calling them Hokus. Mm. So since then, I have bought a pair of Hokas.
You thought it was a poem.
To me, I thought it was a streaming device on my television. But all jokes aside, if the half marathon almost a year ago, we talked about a lot on here. It got its own episode. A couple things happened. One, the reason I signed up for that, I think above anything else, was the exposure to it here and really got excited about the story from like a brewery perspective, but really was trying to quit cigarettes and was trying to have something there to make me quit cigarettes. Turns out half marathon, not that hard to run, and was able to do it without quitting the cigarettes. It didn't
quit. You hear those
stories
about these old English guys that are like,
yeah,
drinking 20 beers a night and then are smoking during the run, yeah, and finishing them when they're like 90.
No, it's a fun thing to take on, and anybody who doesn't proud of it should be great. But at the end of the
proud
day,
of running a smoking marathon,
but not just at the end of the day, it is not. It's not an impossible task. It's not that tall of a feat to do.
If you can run the half marathon, then you can definitely quit smoking. You know what I mean? Because you would say, some would argue.
I just mean it. Yeah, the other, in terms
of
having,
marathon's a lot harder.
Having something so, like, it was almost not hard enough for me to quit smoking. Do you? Because it was like, I could still get this done, and did get it done.
Grind your fucking
it just
face
didn't
off.
Provide enough pressure.
Yeah.
But what did happen, I'll be dead serious, is that the clip we put up at the very end, the video of watching myself run through the finish line.
No one looked good.
Your boy was overweight. Your boy was not in great shape. And then this sounds like a joke, but I'm being dead serious. A bit after that, went to Miami for Wakefest, and really just being surrounded by
good looking people.
But really, it's kind of a different thing than me, but these people who kind of prioritize that a lot of above everything else.
Like fitness.
Fitness, looks, health, being surrounded.
Fitness, looks, Cubanos.
I walked out of that like, I'm gonna be better physically. Not for the vanity reasons.
But for the vanity reasons.
They don't hurt. And but really, all that.
You can't be a Bitcoin mogul and be having a Bitcoin gut.
Gonna completely disagree with you, because we were there during a Bitcoin conference, and let me tell you, when you get the Bitcoin money, they had the prettiest girls on their arms, and they were the only out of shape people in all of Miami.
The only people in all of Miami wearing sweatpants. Yeah.
It was funny to see. But all jokes aside, as it comes to this year, signed up for an ultra marathon, truly as like, okay, I need something hard enough that I actually need to be dedicated enough.
Where you at, Goggins?
That I'm actually going to quit smoking. That was the number one above everything else, and have done so for quite a while now. Maybe 4 or 5 months at this point.
You're talking about it like you're an alcoholic, where you were always a smoker, where you're like, you know what I mean? To me, in my head, someone says with smoking, like kind of a we know how addictive it is, which it is addictive, but it certainly ain't getting off opioids.
Sure. Weirdly,
it seems to me like I would say, like, if you've quit for 5 months,
oh,
you
I'm
should
quit.
Talk about yourself as a quitter.
I'm quit.
Like, done.
100%.
Yeah,
I'm
okay,
quit.
Okay, good, good.
You know, Peter Jennings quit for 20 years. 9/11 happened. He started smoking again and died of cancer. So,
is that a reporter?
Yeah. You never know. But so I certainly view myself as a quitter. Frankly, I'm proud of it, and
you should be, man. No, you should. I'm only saying the positive
for sure.
Yeah.
And you know, may like to tie the thread somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
A real seamster. I do think there was an element of it that was almost this kind of imposter syndrome thing we talked about. It was kind of
wait.
Exactly.
We talked about imposter syndrome,
but truly as like a way to, it was almost tethering me to this last bit of shame or this last
capitulation,
this last bit of scapegoat of like not trying to be better.
And I'm
like,
not good enough because look at me, I'm smoking.
I fucking just sit out here and smoke, but I swear to God, I was holding on to it as like a crutch. And I've made a lot of other better changes since I've let that go. And on the back of that, I've been running a lot. I'm feeling good. And I think I'm ready to run this ultra marathon.
To run with the devil?
Exactly a month. So I'm excited, and that's been my little running journey so far.
So what is the, I don't think you've even said what the upcoming race is.
It's called the Big Brad Ultra. It's as short of a marathon.
Ultra.
Yeah, you have a half, then you have a full, and anything that's over a full.
It's 30 miles.
Is an ultra.
Though.
It's 30, I think 33 miles, I believe.
I think
32.
To pretty much anyone. Definitely far over 98% of people listening. That's a lot of fucking miles.
Yeah.
I know we have some crazy runners that listen.
Yeah.
So shout out to you guys.
I don't want to disrespect you. It's not 100. You know what I mean?
Gog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking directly to Gog. We have a lot of Austin, Texas listens, I think.
Yeah.
I think we might have.
Well,
some
he doesn't have time to listen though. And that's the problem.
He listens to a lot of pods on his runs, I think.
Okay. Okay.
You bang out 50s in the morning for breakfast. I think you do have a lot of pod listening time. But like all jokes aside, this one that's a physical feat in a way that 13 isn't.
And it killed the guy that ran the first marathon. 26, he died.
Hoorah.
You're doing 4 more miles than that.
Hoorah.
And doing it on a mountain.
Yeah. So excited for it. Have quit
excited
cigarettes.
Excited about that part, the trail part?
I'm excited. I've done some.
It's a different type of training.
100%. It has gotten me to run trails that I haven't before, and I've found joy in that. I'll do these little, like, I'll be listening to a song, and I'll try to match my feet to like the beat of the song while like skipping the roots and some of that stuff. It's gotten me in the woods doing some of that stuff in a way that it wouldn't otherwise. That's been fun. Found a trail that was really became like one of my favorite spots to be, that's not too far from here. Good things have come from that, but I'm
you ever do the Orono system?
Yep, done that a little bit. It's nice. This one where there is the elevation has been looking to kind of go get into some more north of us, get into some of those kind of really kind of bigger hikes and kind of run through them as much as I can. It's been fun.
Cool.
I've enjoyed
it.
Cool,
man. Well, I'll be excited to cheer you guys on.
See, yep. Hester, your wife is doing it as well, and she runs like the wind.
Margaret, too.
Yep. Chris Hain.
Yep.
Kevin Broidrick. Nico. Quite a crew doing it. It's cool to see.
But the sidelines will be nice.
And after I finish.
Yeah, what do you think you're going to drink after?
32, I'm going to drink a crisp, refreshing lager. How's that for a transition?
I love it, man. So coming off our convo with Lisa Allen, lager on the brain again, for sure.
And to just, I wanted to hone in on that moment real quick.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, tell me if I'm imagining it, but she had said that year of the lager joke. Every year I say it's this. She had said it was 2018, 2019 to her. I kind of thought we had a moment where it kind of caught eyes with each other. If it was me stating that, I would almost say 2022, kind of right now. And I thought maybe we caught a look of like, oh, wouldn't have said that at 2018. Obviously, different geography, different market. But to ask that question to you, do you think we've seen the year of the lager yet? And if so, what year is that? And where do we stand in kind of lager inside of craft beer?
Nice little short one like that.
And just a couple tie-ons.
I can't remember if I said something or not about it in real time,
mm-hmm.
to the point of different markets, like mm-hmm. kind of mentioned, but I don't remember if I did or not, or just one of those thoughts. In my head, I just articulated like slowly
so,
and perfectly.
So well.
So that must be a reflection of just macroeconomic conditions in our different coasts. But I was probably just like, oh, this is different from that, yeah, in real life. So I don't know. But I think, and also, like, I'd imagine the year's going to come a little quicker if you're only brewing lager.
100%.
Like, for when, I think, to that point, like, I can definitely buy that was the year that, when you look at breweries like Bierstadt or Suarez or a lot of these very lager-focused mm-hmm. breweries open, before that, sure, but that's kind of when they come to a bit of a
maturity
and recognition. And so if you are already been doing that, I'd imagine it really feels like almost making up for lost time in reception to some level.
I think that's a really good point. For where you sit in our market specifically, what do you see right now, or where do you think we're at in terms of lager? It certainly seems like we've been giving it more focus, and I kind of find myself asking you almost monthly, because I have a specific lens up here that is more focused that way of like, are you guys seeing that across the board? What do you think of the velocity of lager? What do you think and what are you seeing?
When I think about it, I realize we've taken a little bit of a different approach in that we really leaned into one beer at the expense of variety within lagers to some degree, because we only have the two horizontals. We made a kind of like many head decision 2 years ago to really lean into Precept, because it seemed like the only way, it seemed like our production of it was a limitation in terms of how, okay, it's hard to secure draft lines of a certain beer. Because a lot of places, we're at like 400, whatever Sniff said, like a lot of accounts. And a lot, not every place, and not probably even most places, have like an impassioned beer buyer that wants to spend time every week thumbing through, you know, oh, what do you got? And then most places have like five or six lines and they want to have great beers on there, but not have to think about it much and get it. So that's the place when you can see like, oh, lager could be good. But like, if you're only making it at most every 6 weeks, 8 weeks, then it's hard.
It can
to
be
like,
hard for them or to have a dedicated line in those
and
things.
For us to try to plan for the holding back of an X amount of, you know, it's so we need to make more of it. And then that came with a printed can, which we got, I think, at the beginning of the summer.
Looks incredible.
So it's hard to, we've seen that beer grow a lot, but it's also been from a concerted effort to lean into it. And it's also been like, and we've seen that the response to it's be, it's, we've done a lot of what we hope to do with it. I think the beer, we've, we spend a lot of time thinking about it, like, almost like substance in the early days kind of thing. I mean, substance and, now still, but, just one last thing and then I'll shut up. No. But to talk about the sort of lager market as a whole is tough, because that means, sure, we have Fest Beer. We have two lagers kind of surprisingly coming up right next to each other, that aren't Precept, but that basically like never happens because we keep the tanks full with that beer.
Yeah. What's the second one?
Wet hop lager.
Of course. Yeah. And that's what we're going
to
get
so
into.
So just by shrinking sort of the types we make, I think it's hard for me to speak on the market as a whole.
From when you made, when you had that multiple heads decision and were making that decision to commit to Precept.
We call it a Cerberus decision.
It was that in terms of like a chicken or the egg thing, were you seeing velocity increase in lager that then made that decision one to make? Or was it almost the opposite of where not moving it as much as you'd like to, that you were using that to increase velocity or stop doing so many and get into one? Which scenario was that?
Well, I think they kind of are related to each other a lot of the time, but ultimately, no matter how, you need to have a lot of resources and a lot of experience in doing exactly that to like drive to like make sit to create bigger real interest in a beer. It's very, very, very hard. You see big breweries try to do it all the time and 100%. Fail all the time with far more resources and all the whatever than us. So you're driven by the fact that like this seems like it should be more.
Gotcha.
In that way. But it's mostly the first part where you're hitting these almost walls of like, it seems like we can't get over this hump.
Gotcha.
Because we can't, we don't, it's just not scheduled and it's not focused on enough to make, to allow us to get to over it. You know what I mean?
And then it sounds like from what you said before, once given that focus, the feedback has been pretty good that you have broken through some of those levels and are seeing what you wanted to see out of that.
Yeah. I mean, we make it every, we package it every 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
it. Yeah. So yes. Yeah. For sure.
That's that concise, that short, yes, concise thing in your head you're talking about.
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that very much a chicken and egg on some level, mm-hmm, was sort of the hump you can't get over if you're making it less of any beer less than that. There's going to be a limit to it. Either needs to be kind of viewed as this special fun thing, like, mm-hmm, you know, like Dangle, or for yeah, as yeah, an example. Yeah. Where it's just one time a year and it's great for that. But if you're in that middle ground, it's tough to really grow something, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could say that, like something like IVI us, it's like really great. And I think if we decided to do sort of what we did with Precept, I think we could definitely make strides in that way. But it also comes always at the expense of other beers and variety. Yeah, yeah. But we make so much more beers now than I thought we ever would. So I remind myself of that a lot. Like, no, we're actually pretty, but still then compared to most other breweries of our like class, if you get on, you know, Beer Advocate or Untappd, mm-hmm, there's far less, yeah, even though it's still like hundreds.
The one thing, I've mentioned it before, but my being here where I am, there's a need or a want for more lager here. And one of the really specific things that I see, or I find myself, it's fine when I look at the packaging list every time, it, like, you'll kind of do it quarterly. We'll do it quarterly. It comes out with what's going to be packaged when. And every time that comes out and I'm peeking through that, I find myself kind of viscerally, the thing I'm looking for the most is not like what's, that maybe used to be like, is there a new dipper? What's new? Or a sub, the variants?
Pronounced diaper.
The distro. but the like the, some of the things that if you're kind of not like just kind of looking and then taking stock after of like what was I looking for, getting excited about naturally. So I found subby variants started popping up there for me. New hoppy beers. What it has been the last year for me the most is the real light lagers, the rice lager, something of ourselves, things like that is obviously super specific to me here. But do you see an appetite for that and how those beers sell? Is it something we can expect a reasonable amount more to be coming from, or do beers from our brewery of that lightness, a Sapporo style beer, do those do well for us and make sense for us?
I just think it's maybe we're missing something, but the reason huge breweries do it is economies of scale,
mm-hmm,
and they just are not at play in the same way they will be. So no matter what, it seems a little weird to me to try to basically make a Sapporo that will inevitably be basically like double the price.
Yeah.
And I have nothing but respect for it. I was at a bachelor party a few weekends ago, and a guy from Vermont was there and brought Zero Gravity in 12 packs, and it was some exactly what you're describing, like
rice lager,
some super light, like craft lager. And he said that they sell them for like $13 a 12 pack, which I nothing but respect for. But that's going to be the absolute bottom of what you could charge for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine a world where. I don't know. I'd love to hear about it. Maybe we should talk to him for real. I like Zero Gravity a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, it got me thinking about exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then I caught myself at a bachelor party talking about the macroeconomics of lager, and I decided to shut up. So thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah, no, and it's... certainly understand that in the bigger picture. It's been funny to kind of take stock.
All right, guys, gather around the campfire. Uncle Noah has a story for you.
But very interesting. In terms of the brands that have been lost to Precept, the Helles has gone away. See lager beer itself get brewed a lot less. Is there any of those being revisited more often, or is Precept as a more singular brew with more seasonal lager around it kind of the way forward for us?
It isn't until equipment changes. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. If I could do it all over, I would have got a few. I would have just done things differently with the horizontals of probably more smaller tanks. Mm-hmm. But it's not a big enough thing to. We'll probably within the next year we'll figure something out to get another horizontal in.
Gotcha.
We talk about, we have some kind of loose ideas, but yeah, until that happens, this shall be the way.
Yeah. And then on the technical
side. Love it or leave it.
On the technical side, just kind of a very basic question about like what matters to you. I remember early on, I think it was our Shilling podcast, it was kind of learning what decoction was for the first time. And then it seemed like with a lot of lager.
Don't put that on me, and, dude.
What?
I knew what decoction was.
Not you, me.
Oh, yeah, okay, me. Like, easy. No. I've learned a lot through this podcast, but come on.
Yeah, for me.
Gotcha.
And
sorry.
During that time of learning what decoction was and learning more of this stuff, it seemed to me that there's a lot of things in specifically the lager process where it's kind of like maybe anecdotally. It works, sort of like, you know,
Germans do it.
You'd find it come down to this, like, yeah, you know, roundedness, or like it gives it, it completes the beer or rounds the beer. But having these parts of the process that can generally be very labor intensive, they are kind of more steeped in tradition. You'd find a lot of the
mashed in tradition, you might even say.
but that the where different brewers stand on them would kind of be up in the air. Kind of coming on the back of Lisa Allen and being like, we don't have the setup to be able to decoct. Can you use it that way? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have the setup to be able to decoct. And then like what she kind of puts her flag on as being the most important is step mashing and things like that. As you sit today looking at having the time for a beer like Precept that you continue to just tweak over time and really hone in on over an extended period of time, what parts of the process of lagering do you find tangibly matter the most to you? Where are you staking your flag?
Well, I would be careful to say to, you know, plant Lisa's flag for her on what her biggest values are. I got the impression brewer to brewer that it was more like temperature, time, and no filtering were the things that mm-hmm. seemed like step mashing was almost more of a reflection of their equipment setup.
Yeah,
talking to her about kind of how our workaround is, we kind of decoct some beers, but we are in the same situation mm-hmm. where it's not ideal for a handful of reasons. But anyway, that's for another podcast. So where's your flag? For my flag, for Precept particularly?
Yeah, sure. Well, that's the one we've put all the energy behind. And
we've always done some version of a stepped mash with that beer. And I think all the lagers, like, some might just have a single or two steps. So it's like you do your normal sack rest at like 150 or whatever. Then you mm-hmm. add hot water to get it up to like 160 to basically, it's called like mashing out.
Mm-hmm.
And then other times we've done a decoction. It's gone through a lot of variations, and I've never seen a huge amount of difference between them, but I've also never brewed it without the step.
Mm.
So I think, and there's enough sort of, it's easy enough for one to do. When you really look at decoction, I still sometimes wonder like what, I don't know, whatever. That's a whole rabbit hole. I'm not a staunch decoction guy by any means. So I think for Precept, hops have been the thing we played with the most because it's a hoppy beer, but it's hops that not hoppy like we know how to make hoppy. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, like Prima has always sort of been in my head this sort of float, but they barely even make that anymore. So it becomes more just this memory of this beer, which, you know, is such a hairy situation because I'm thinking about how this beer tasted 12 years ago, 10 years ago. But still, it left that big of an impact on me and did many times after. It wasn't like the one time I had Prima. But yeah, it's just hard to, and I still don't think it's perfect in that way. One big change we made, we subbed out Saaz for Saphir, which is a German, a little bit more, rather than spicy, kind of, you know, spicy is how most people describe Saaz, in like a spice rack kind of way, not like caliente.
Not Scoville factor.
And Saphir's a little bit more like lemony leaning. I think that's made a good change, but I think we can still, because it's like you, in any hot, normal American hoppy beer, like you're not considering or at least giving much consideration to how much a 15 minute or addition matters, or how much should be and what should be in the first wort hop or whatever, which in the lot, there's no dry hops. It's only that. And you're using, it has more pounds per barrel in the kettle than any other beer we make.
Any other beer we make.
Which is kind of crazy, but it's all because it's like 3% alpha hops. So I think that's a huge part. Also spunding, once we got good at that, and then pretty much every single time knowing that beer's exactly carbonated to where it is supposed to be heading into the bright, to eliminate that step of just adding that gas, no matter how we're over, again, over the years, we've developed a lot of things for our carbing process, which we have wall-mounted flow meters. We have a calculator that we've put together on Google, which basically is like, how much beer's in here? How much time do you have to carbonate it? Where's the carbonation at now? And then if you put that in, it'll tell you exactly what you need to run the flow rate at of CO2. But that's developed over like many years of trial and error. But it works like a fucking dream.
No shit.
Again, lot of overcarbed and undercarbed beer to get to there. But yeah, it's beautiful. And then, also, you need a $20,000 piece of equipment to measure the CO2 and oxygen at that low of a level. Like a Zom won't cut it.
Yeah,
you need the big rig, the Gehaltometer.
That you need those readings to work the Google calculator.
You
to
need
get
to
you
precisely
to the
know what the current carbonation is.
Yeah,
and then you need to precisely know that how much CO2 you're actually getting in. So yeah, I'm really honestly proud of that, but that's a separate thing.
That's incredible.
But we don't even have to fuck with that, is my point.
Yeah.
Because the carb's already there by nature. So it just goes in, the stones don't even get put on. And I think the, again, intangible like all this stuff is, but anytime you can naturally carbonate a beer in that delicate of a way, just one less thing of beating it up. Because it's already getting beat up a little bit in fermentation. Yeah. Like, the beer is beating itself up by creating this much CO2. The yeast is beating the beer up by creating all this up. And it's, on a large level, it's very good. But the more vigorous, the more, you're almost always going to see, sometimes, like, when you have ripping fermentations, head retention's no good.
Yeah.
So, you capture that CO2 in... Yeah, now I'm just really granularly explaining.
No,
what
but
spunding
in terms
is.
Of, but,
but
that,
I think I believe in that for sure.
And even for as a novice, like early on when I'm learning things about this and came at the when
a tenderfoot, a
in
noob.
Terms of the things that are intuitive, though, you know what I mean. When you're being taught stuff and taught about the how we bottle, because we bottle conditioned bottles here, and why that. It's very intuitive to think why not beating that beer up. You know what I mean? But even taking that across anywhere that you can do it, the idea, it's just so intuitive that not beating it up that way is better for the liquid.
And also, as you'll see in the can, I bet that 100% Maine grown Pilsner malt does not hurt the beer one bit.
Nice touch.
Thank you.
Nice touch. Incredible. It's been... this is such a stupid thing for people in the industry to say, because it's the thing
when people pause, when say, it's been, do you have the urge to sing the Bare Naked Ladies song?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. Because you do it a fair amount, and I have it so hard every time.
One fucking week since she looked at me. But the thing that everybody says that I'm finding myself right now, drinking lighter beer as much as ever,
what
more than ever.
Drinking?
Frankly,
you don't need to say it that way. You can just tell me.
No, I did the thing I'm the thing we just talked about, like real light beer. So rice beer,
like
Sapporo would get me going. No, I had a Michelob Ultra the other day with a group of friends, and
it's a little too light, isn't it?
I like it. I liked it a lot.
I have nothing. I'm not being like, that's not a man's. No. It's none of the. But whenever there's, I drink a ton of Corona. I'll go through phases where I'm drinking a lot of a thing because it's also a peer the limit. You just want something to have in the fridge and not think about it most of the time. But the. There's a limit that I don't know where it is, where I hit it, where it's like, well, that's too light. And Bud Light pulls it off, but Miller Lite is, it's too water leaning to me then.
Yeah, I'm in a, I do, maybe it's cigarette based, and maybe like if I think about,
I got my buds back.
But wait, when I think about my entire palate, like it was what, like if I have waffles, give me all the maple syrup. If I have hot dogs, give me all of the toppings dripping off, and that's why my white shirt has stains on it. But if I'm, and even in beer, like what, give me early on, give me dippas. Later on, give me like really sour, really fruited beers.
So you're saying you've never said stop to the guy with the pepper grinder?
If I'm at Olive Garden, we are we're drowning in Parmesan. But truly, that's why I kind of paused and thought about it when you asked. When like recent trip to a lake, had the cooler full of Bissell beers and kept reaching for Precept. I will say, to be honest and frank, Precept is not my personal favorite of the light beers.
I wouldn't really call it a light beer.
True.
For starters.
Of a crispy beer.
Yeah.
It's a much better adjective. Absolutely. Never been my
so
favorite.
So we're wrapping this up.
What's that?
We're wrapping this up.
Because
you ready to get out of here? Yeah, cool. It's been good, man.
But I think in that context, if I was going light, it always would have been Baby Genius. I found myself reaching for Precept. I don't know if I'm in a much more subdued place with my taste right now across the kind of across the spectrum.
Maybe you'll finally grow the courage to start dropping some notes, dude.
Tasting notes? Let's see what happens.
Maybe.
We'll see what happens.
So what is your favorite crisp then? If I'm not good enough for
that
you,
we
what
make,
is, dude?
I was a big Lucent fan. I was certainly a big Lucent fan. I think if I had them back to back,
I
was...
You just like dead people, though. You started to like Mac Miller so much after.
That's not true. still don't like
him.
No.
You don't like him?
I think he's fine. I have a lot of trouble.
Nipsey's your Lucent.
Nipsey, I loved before. I just maybe have never brought that to you. I will stand by Nipsey forever. I will say the reason I didn't like Mac is
I don't remember you talking a lot about Lucent, man. And
now it's dead,
and you're talking a lot about it.
I do
want
to say this, though, that since you brought it up. Mac Miller had that element of like kind of knowledge and to the way that he went about music, all these lessons, self care, and died of an overdose. I find it very hard to rectify those things in my mind. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to be taking my advice from the person who lost the battle. And that might be an incredibly disrespectful thing to say. And I think
it's logic.
An incredible person. He was easy to cheer for, but I really have trouble rectifying that. But
yeah, I don't have any opinion on him.
Neither here nor there. Yeah. And lastly, Gold Light. There's a lot of narrative there for me specifically.
Yeah, just picking more beers out of the dead sky. Yeah,
but we just released
it.
I really, really enjoy that beer. And when that's around summertime, just beginning in the cooler for me when I go to a camp or go to do those things, that's without question the reach for 100% from our stuff. But yeah.
And since you're a company man, you don't even taste others.
No, again, I go to I drink what people bring us in the cooler. I drink our beer when I like load up a cooler to go. When I'm at home, I don't drink a ton of beer unless I brought it home from here. And then I'll get into these little spurty phases where I'll go to the one Nocturnum and kind of want to go if I'm trying to taste different things.
Exotic.
And right now, but right now I think that more of that kind of, what's the opposite of domestic, imported lager type stuff that they might have access to, I think would be something I'd be interested in trying.
It's domestic.
More of. Wouldn't that be if it was made here?
Yeah, but it's pronounced domestic.
Ooh.
It's a callback, a failed callback, apparently.
That's tough.
Okay.
I'm sorry to not be there to catch you.
I thought
you.
We were sparring partners.
But let's move it along, because I did want to get into some
you
more.
You sure don't want
to? We can live in domestic, if you would like. Oktoberfest stuff. Big time of year. We've talked about it 100 times, but it seems that it garners more and more with every year that goes by. I think breweries rely on it more. Bigger breweries put the thing out earlier, do more of it. It grows over time. And I wanted to ask you about the difference between Marzen and Fest beer. And then kind of bigger, what you who have a bigger window of beer than me, how you've seen not Oktoberfest in terms of the trends and the like execution, but Oktoberfest in terms of the style of beer itself, if that has changed or had a trend to it over time. Would the Marzen Fest beer difference be as simple as like swapping Munich malt for Pilsner malt and just getting a little bit lighter? Is that the general?
It wouldn't necessarily be like that simple in terms of a malt swap, but yeah, lighter for sure. But Marzen, I think it means like of March in mm-hmm. Germany, in German. So like those are lagered by virtue of that for like 6 months.
They were beers that would be brewed in March historically, right, and then released at the end of September.
Right. And generally, like, if you're going to lager something for longer, it's going to be a heftier beer.
Yeah.
If you look at something like Baltic Porters or like Doppelbox or something like that, all have longer traditional lagering times. They're all maltier, bigger beers, which kind of just makes sense. But so yeah, color and like just malt intensity, they're just a lighter kind of, I view Fest beer, and I'm could not be less of an expert. I've never been to Oktoberfest. It's all imported examples and now more domestic examples. That was some old stupid thing Pete used to say about people that would come into the pig and be like, what do you have for domestics? So that's where that comes. But anyway, to me, it's just a sort of the Fest style is more palatable by just virtue of it being less, you know, like less intense.
For the environment that it's in, where you're going to be drinking them in large format and many of them. Does that and why the almost
most
the
just the spirit of most lagers, like we've never brewed a Doppelbock or anything, because I think it'd be fun to try something different, but I think it'd be hard to like conscientiously move 20 barrels of mm-hmm. it, you know what I mean? That's just where my palate, that's ultimately a reflection of where my palate is at with like what I think of, just mm-hmm. sort of unadulterated like fall lager, like keep it. If the whole thing was slanted later, like a more November thing, I would be more inclined to beef it up a hair. But
gotcha.
When you're thinking about shoulder, Jack Shoulders from running season, it can be summer or fall on mm-hmm. any given day, you know? And I just think that type of beer fits a wider spectrum of occasion in my head.
Based on some
lighter kind of crisp, toastier versus like caramely.
Yeah, totally. And based on some of that answer, is it fair to extrapolate that over time in craft, that the showcase of these breweries for what they put out for an Oktoberfest has kind of shifted more to the Fest beer style, a little bit more light, a little bit more pale over time? Or is that trying to draw a line that isn't there?
I wouldn't say. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, just because I don't think I have some like wildly unique palette or perspective on that. But mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you I can't think of a lot of places like that are just cranking through like Ruby Lager.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
no matter who you are, what size you are.
Yeah.
So yeah, probably.
Gotcha.
You doing Ruby? Or you doing light orange?
Light yeah, orange, baby. Figured. I'm doing. I like our fest beer.
And I heard Miller Lite's doing a fest beer this year.
What'd you say?
Miller Lite's doing a fest beer.
Is there a joke there? Or is that real life?
I hope there's a joke there.
I like it, baby. I'm here to catch you all day today.
I've trust fallen to the floor.
I got you back on the domestic. I came around late.
You did.
But last, to that point, are there any major tweaks to our fest beer this year from, was last year our first year releasing?
Yeah.
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 In year two?
Two. For one, there was no fooder. That was largely, honestly, to the point we talked about earlier, like that was the only place to put it.
Yeah.
And it also seemed like a fitting and a more fitting beer than most to do that. But so there was no, so it was just all stainless this year. And a lot of that though was a product of, it's just very, very hard to get a more clear beer in a fooder. And then with that color, it just looks kind of muddled. And I thought the beer was really good. The appearance was my issue
last year.
And it wasn't a make or break thing for me, but it was like, okay, if we can get this to be, have let more light through, I want it to.
100%.
And this year it absolutely will. And I think it'll almost be shockingly bright by comparison.
Hell yeah.
And I'd be curious to see how that affects the taste, because the recipe, I think I maybe made like a 10% swap of Munich to Vienna or vice versa.
Gotcha.
I made a very small tweak, but it wasn't a major thing. And I made it like last October, so after having the beer.
Yeah.
So I can't even tell you what it was, but I try to do that, to do it while I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember why I did it by the time it's brewed again, totally. But that's okay.
That's why you do it in the moment
when you're fresh off of
the feedback from the beer. Are we going to, I saw that Lucy, it looked like Lucy was heading to Schilling. Is that a company thing? Are we pouring at their Oktoberfest, do you know, this year?
Yeah, we are. And it was, as I've told you, I'm just Booker T from August through like September, like every weekend it's been a wedding or a bachelor party. So it was some weekend I couldn't do it. Yeah. And, but yeah, no, we'll be there.
No, that's
I don't know. The beer will be there. I'm not sure if humans from us will be there, but
yeah,
great event though.
That's why I said we had a blast there. That's when we interviewed them through going to that. And I guess the last thing I would ask you is, what of the Oktoberfest fair, what do you get the most excited for, or what do you like to eat
for food?
Yeah, as we embark on our first, to be serious, for the boys in the kitchen here in Milo, who I think, the thing we're lucky with our chef is he's so narrative driven in a really cool way, that this will be one of his first opportunities to doing an Oktoberfest menu to kind of do some of that more historical narrative stuff that excites him anyways, other than what's present in the regular menu. So what are some of your go-tos?
In all the Oktoberfest I've been to, I mean, it's hard to even, hopefully we get the pork knuckle. It's such a fun thing to eat.
Mm.
It's such a like a caveman-y looking thing.
He's doing much pork, probably some regular schnitzel.
Yep.
That way.
It's hard to fucking beat a brat and pretzel though.
Yeah.
Really is.
Well, you got to have them, but we want to do a few things outside of that, cuz that's so ubiquitous for good reason, because you can't beat it and it goes great with beer. But we got a couple fun tricks up our sleeve for this one. We'll tell you more about it when it comes and goes.
Cool, man. I got a little business to attend to. That sounded that it's a drug deal. No, it's a drug deal. No, I have some research to do about the Phantasm we're using today. I just realized. So let's three bay it and get out of here.
Yeah,
sound good?
Absolutely. It is my turn to ask you. I listened back to the last episode. I gotcha. So let's do, we talked a lot about lagers of different types today, or beers that are lagered. Let's do, I'm going to give you three chess pieces, and you're going to pair them up with any beer style that would be lagered of your choosing.
Yep.
Let's go. We've got to start at the top and the bottom, right? So let's do the king. Let's do the pawn. And let's do the knight. The aforementioned knight. Pawn, knight, king, lagered beer styles.
Pawn, knight, king. Well, for pawn, we'll obviously go with the American Adjunct Light.
Mm-hmm.
Just the peon of, you're going to die for me, right? You go to any trash can in America, and you'll probably see a lot of dead soldiers of some light lager somewhere.
And there is no better term for a pawn than a dead soldier.
Yes, because they go and die.
Yeah.
Heard
that.
Knight.
They move a little different, a little bit of,
I'm getting there. I don't need your commentary. let's go with IPL. 'Cause they're honestly like, knights are somewhat useless. Like they're not useless, but they're not as useful as you think they should be when you're playing. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's like, I can't lose my knight. But like the L, it's great to trap someone or like block a move if you have that waiting there to block a move. But they're more like, what is their place is what I feel like a lot. And what is the place of an IPL? It's a place you don't see being occupied much at all, frankly, anymore.
It's certainly fair.
They move a little different, as you say.
Yeah.
And then King. I got to go German Pils. It's definitely my favorite style of lager. Enough said.
Very easy.
Yeah.
Very, very easy. Well, good luck with the Phantasm.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you.
And until
next
time. Not
the Batman movie.
When we absolutely, positively do have a guest. Bye.
We got more great ones coming.
Yeah, we do.
And if you're still listening now, you don't care either way.
Yeah, you don't care if it's just us. Later.
I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden, it will all become lovely. The flower that opens.